Hello and welcome to Cinema of Doom. I'm Dave and I'm here with Dion, friend of the show. Dion, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, mate. How are you?
Very well. This is a Patreon exclusive episode, the second episode ever of Cinema of Doom. We're covering The Great Escape. We've just watched it, Dion. It went for about 4.5 hours.
How can it be the second episode? It's my first one.
It's your first episode.
So this is the first official one.
No, I did one when I did Escape from New York.
Yeah,
commentary.
But that's solo. Doesn't count.
Audio commentary doesn't solo, count, Escape mate. From New York. At one point, I was quoting from Johnny Cash songs.
Oh, God. Poor Patreon user.
The Patreon users were getting their money's worth that day.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, we just watched Great Escape. Obviously, the classic World War II film, Escaping from a POW Camp. Do we have a name of what the camp was, Dion? It's based on a real story.
Yeah, it was the
Luftwaffe or something.
The Stalag Luft 3 in Linden.
Okay.
I'm not German, so sorry about my accent.
Yeah, well. And it was based on a true story, correct?
Yes.
And so, basically, in essence, it's directed by the great John Sturges, who also, I think, did Magnificent Seven and various other movies. Some of them with Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen was probably, well, he was the main build star. But it's very much an ensemble piece, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
James Garner.
Richard Attenborough,
Charles Bronson,
James McDonald,
James Cohen,
yes,
was big in it, playing an Aussie.
Well, we actually didn't know he was an Aussie till like three quarters of the way through.
I would say in the last 10 minutes, he actually says he's Australian, but I thought he was just doing an appalling British accent.
Yeah, it was. I still don't think he was Australian. He was British. We'll just say
he was playing British, but he was doing a bad British accent.
Well, bad Australian accent, yeah. It was really bad.
Now, in essence, the film, like, just to give a sort of summary of the movie, it all starts with them in the prisoner of war camp. They're all...
Now, no spoilers, Dave.
No, this is full spoilers, Dion. This is Patreon exclusive.
Look,
Jesus Christ, are you fucking kidding?
They might not have watched it.
No, they've
it's
watched it.
It's only been out since, like, 1935
or something. 1963, I think. What date is it? 1963? I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. Let me look it up.
It's 62 or 63. Come on, you're on the fucking page. You're on the IMDb.
1963.
Thank you. So I was right. And obviously, this movie was after Magnificent Seven. Steve McQueen was becoming a major, major star by this point. James Garner, who, Dion, you said was a very attractive man at one point. You did mention that. He's a good-looking guy.
He was a good... I was like, he could play Superman if he was like looked like that
now. Well, he died a couple of years ago, so
yeah,
that
of course.
Passed him by... But, I mean, I know him best from Rockford Files, all through the 70s. He was, when he was a little bit older, probably in his 40s by that point.
Never watched Rockford Files because that was before my time.
Mate, I've watched every single episode of Rockford Files. I own it all on DVD.
You're showing your age, mate. Jesus. You're showing your age.
Well, it's like a fine wine, Rockford Files. It just gets better and better.
Unlike some people I'm talking to on this podcast.
And so basically it's the Germans have assembled sort of all the professional escapees, from all these prisoner of war camps in one camp and kind of tried to give it excellent security. And basically they say put all their rotten eggs in one basket, don't they?
Correct.
Would you agree with me throughout this movie that the German security seemed kind of lacking?
Yeah, I mean, they tell you kind of at the start... Let's just live in comfort and wait out this war together. I'm like, wouldn't you put them in like isolation cells and each one can't talk to each other so they couldn't plan escapes?
But I wouldn't give them fucking rakes and like, you know, like digging instruments and stuff.
He goes, I'll give you gardening tools, but not for escaping, even though you're the best escapist ever in the history of the war.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I want to give you a fair chance, so I'm going to give you some tools. Now... I was kind of like, I love it though. Like as an ensemble piece, what was your initial reactions? Because it's one of my favorite movies. I haven't watched it for 10 years.
Well, it's one of mine too. Like it's a good movie, and I think it's done quite well. I mean, it shows its age. I think in terms of storytelling and shot selection and pacing, and it is a very slow movie.
Sure,
but no, I mean obviously it's a classic and it's really good.
I mean, it's what I like about these old movies. They weren't afraid to tell a story. And even though it's slow, the suspense slowly builds, and it does pay off in the final act. Like, all that building does actually pay off when they go for the escape.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I mean, Shawshank Redemption will be another big escape film that we'll probably watch on on Cinema Definitely. Of Doom.
Yeah.
But I think Shawshank did it better. But then obviously Shawshank came afterwards, so would have taken a lot of the foundations of The Great Escape and put it into that film.
Exactly. I mean, Shawshank's literally 30 years later, isn't it?
I mean, I think this film's a lot like The Beatles. The Beatles are great.
Yeah.
But
best band ever.
Yeah, but if they came out now, you'd be like, meh. But because they
really? Would, if The Beatles came out now, they would conquer. Because they're up against such shit now.
I don't know if they conquer because a lot of the stuff that is coming out now obviously relies so heavily on The Beatles and what they did.
Sure. But like, don't you think that music now is at a rock bottom?
Well, it depends what you listen to.
I mean, I'm just, if I hear any modern music, I flip the channel.
Well, I think that's being a bit disingenuous to, like, lots of different genres of music.
There's a lot of shit music out there. I know we were talking about it at work just the other day.
Yeah, but there's a lot of good music out there, too.
Name someone good. Come on.
The Larceny, I really like them. The Phantoms. Who? Exactly. This is the Who? Thing. This is the thing. You're talking about a select bit of music on the radio that you listen to.
The commercial music.
You're not talking about... So when you say... You can't say modern music. You can say pop music.
Pop music now sucks.
Fair enough. But where?
Who's ever heard of the Phantoms?
Well, a lot of people. They're really popular.
I've never heard of them.
Well, because you're an idiot. But that's what I mean. There's a lot.
Yeah, I would have said that.
And they're modern rock, the Phantoms. And they're actually... I like them.
Mate, I listen to classics because the classics are absolute gold.
Sure, sure.
You know, I listen to... I've got on my... I've been listening to a lot of Beach Boys recently.
Beach Boys are good.
Beach Boys are excellent, man. Yeah. I'm sorry, the modern music doesn't compare to the Beach Boys and the Beatles. Nowhere near.
Well, I think that's also what you grew up on.
Yeah. I wasn't born in the 60s.
I mean, I personally don't like the Beatles. I personally can't stand listening to their songs.
Why have we invited John Cinema of Doom with these controversial comments about the Beatles?
I like the Beatles as a band. I like the Beatles for what they did for music and what they brought out at the time. But nowadays, and my music taste being a little bit younger than you, is very different. And so the Beatles don't really do it for me. That's all.
Yeah,
but they're still a great band.
You're a millennial. You don't know what you're talking about, basically.
Okay, boomer. Okay, boomer. Even though you're Gen X, you should be siding with me.
Anyway, getting back to Great Escape. I want to draw some attention to... It's a fairly... I think... If you notice, there's literally no female roles in this movie.
For a Hollywood movie of its time, wouldn't be many female roles. A lot of the movies then didn't have females, and if they did, it was the damsel in distress.
Or the romantic interest.
Which was still very much a damsel in distress,
you know? That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. But there wasn't any female
roles.
There's
no lead female roles and stuff like there is these days, because that was the culture back then.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, you could... But it would have been hard to have... I've seen movies like Schindler's List has... females in it, like in inside the where he's, you know, when he's working, he has sex with the SS officer and stuff, whatever.
Yeah,
she
but
was.
I think Schindler's List is fairly modern for its time as well. Yeah. Spielberg kind of pushed a lot of boundaries with that.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, I mean, it fit. I mean, it would have been out of there wasn't really room to have Steve
no,
McQueen have a romantic.
The story didn't really have the room for it.
Yeah, it wouldn't have made any. So I mean, we've covered.
I mean, Schindler's List came out in 1993.
Yeah. A lot later.
So it's a very... I would classify it as a modern film.
Schindler's List is definitely a modern classic.
Yeah, and I think that's why... Like, films from the 60s... I mean, you can look at, like, Paul Newman's The Hustler.
Yeah.
Good
movie.
12 Angry Men.
Great movie. Is there a female on the jury in 12 Angry Men? No.
No, it's 12 Angry Men.
could they be on juries back then?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But they're not in the...
I think so.
There's not many females in any of those movies, and I think that was just...
Ice Station Zebra with Rock Hudson was also all-male cast.
Well, a lot of them were, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, I think we were talking during the movie a lot about the character that Charles Bronson plays, Danny Tunnel King. He basically builds all the tunnels, Dion, am I correct in saying, and then kind of gets claustrophobia and stage fright right towards the end.
Correct. Interestingly, Charles Bronson, the actor, also was claustrophobic. I read that on IMDb.
Oh, he was himself.
Yeah, so the actor was claustrophobic and the character he was playing for was claustrophobic, so he played that quite convincingly.
How interesting in real life that the guy who was claustrophobic was digging all the tunnels.
Well, yeah, it was from... He used to be a coal miner before he became an actor.
Why would you pick coal miner as a career if you're claustrophobic?
Well, he became claustrophobic while being a coal miner. So he didn't start off claustrophobic.
Okay.
From working in the mines, he became claustrophobic.
I see. It makes more sense now. Is this Charles Bronson or the guy he was playing?
Charles Bronson. Also, the guy he was playing was claustrophobic from probably...
Yeah, but Charles Bronson was a coal miner who then became an actor.
That's right, yeah.
I see, right, okay. I was getting confused, thinking the guy he was playing was also a coal miner.
No, no,
but he was just claustrophobic.
You guys can't see me rolling my eyes
around now. Well, we're just trying to get to the bottom of the story. Well, one thing we always do on Cinema of Doom and Signal of Doom is I get to the bottom of the story. It might take me a while. Might take me a while. You know, it doesn't come easy sometimes. It's like 60 minutes in here sometimes.
Mate, Voyager 2 would take longer to get to the edge of the solar system.
I think it's past the solar system now.
Now, but yeah, and it took like 60 years, man.
Man, they got a lot of fucking... Like, what were they doing in the 70s?
Shooting probes out.
Yeah, but like, it's a pretty good effort to get a fucking probe from the 70s with the technology to still transmit back to Earth.
Yeah, I was reading. I don't know. Obviously, I'm not a scientist.
But alien tech, I'd say, probably.
It's not alien tech.
I'd say it probably is.
Okay, it's alien tech. We'll go with that.
And mate, the pyramids are also built by aliens.
Oh my god! Yeah. All right, back to the film we're meant to be talking about.
Donald Pleasance. We know him from movies such as was he in Halloween, and other films like that. He plays the Forger. Now he had a very unfortunate turn in this movie. The character of Blythe, he suddenly lost his eyesight, it seemed, on the night that they were about to escape.
Yeah, look, that I don't think that story was told well in the film, and I think the ensemble cast obviously...
The crowded nature of the story.
...helped that, because it was a little crowded with... They tried to do storylines for every single character, which I think was a mistake. So, like, there's a scene where he all of a sudden can't see, like, randomly out of the blue... And then there's the next scene. He's
literally on the night they're going to escape.
Yeah, well, no, I don't think it was on the night. I think it feels like that because of the pacing, but right. I think it was a few nights before that scene was. But then on the night, he's fully blind, and then they have a scene where they're like, you can't come, and James Gardner says, I'll save him. But I do think they could have seen that a little bit better. He could have started to go blind. Like, you know, in the scene when he's talking about the birds?
Yes, yes.
Like, he could have started to... shown a little bit of they'd kind of blur the film for him, done a bit of that there, and
we also could have had a bit more of a tease of Charles Bronson's character. You were critical of that, and I thought you made a good point.
Yeah, I think all of a sudden, so he's building a tunnel, the tunnel caves in, he claws his way out, then they go, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine.
He goes, I'm fine. But I read that as meaning he wasn't fine.
But then the next scene, he's running out struggling. Somehow he has all black clothes. But anyway, he's running out in full black and he's going to cut the wire because he has to escape. And I'm just like, where the hell did this come from? Last time I saw you, you were digging a tunnel. You're all gung-ho about it.
Yeah.
You're all about escaping through the tunnel. And so Dave thinks that he understood the scene as...
I when I saw the scene where it collapsed on him, I read the way he was saying, I'm fine, meaning he wasn't fine. But I do agree, there was a dramatic shift in the next scene where he's running outside.
Yeah, and I think they could have seeded that story a little bit better where...
No, I agree.
Maybe just a bit more doubt in his character.
Because he had several scenes where he was just digging tunnels, so he could have inserted something.
Yeah, little bit of doubt, like just, you know, stop digging and have a moment, stuff like that in the tunnel, just like heavy breathing, whatever, I think would have helped
the story. I definitely agree, the guy who lost his sight, they should have done something in the bird scene.
Yeah, totally. You know, that was his scene, really.
Yeah, and then we had James Garner's character playing the Scrounger. Am I alone in saying that it wouldn't surprise me if there was kind of like a gay subtext to his character?
You would be alone in saying that. I didn't really get that at all.
No, I don't mean like I don't mean in the film he was playing gay, but I felt like the scene with the guard when he invited him in and all that stuff, I read that it could be a coded Hollywood way of saying that there was like a sexual liaison there where he got some stuff from him.
Yeah, I think you might maybe watching the film through modern lenses there, because I think 1963 Hollywood would definitely not have had that subtext.
But
back in
the day, they did in westerns and stuff. They literally would do like coded things inside the movies, yeah, that people wouldn't pick up on. But there was scenes with Montgomery Clift, for example, where he was, like, coded flirting in films with male co-stars in the actual shots.
I mean, maybe.
I don't know. I just you said it was gay at the time, if I remember. You said, this is so gay.
Yes, let's
quote you exactly.
But what I meant by that is I think the scene was very camp in that the way it was acted, and I don't think it was meant to be camp. I think it was just the over-the-top acting.
James Garner is a charming but somewhat cheesy actor.
Yeah, and I think that came across when he was trying to cajole the guy into his room to make the scene look very homoerotic.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I don't think that was a subtext in the film. I think that was us looking through the film through modern lenses.
Yeah, just to, like...
Well, not even a coincidence. I think it's us looking through the film through our modern lenses of society.
Okay.
If we watched the film in 1963, we would not have picked up on any
of that.
Just
innocently...
We would have just innocently watched it as...
And in fairness, like, there isn't much to pick up on. Like, we're digging in to even see that much, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Like, he wanted to get the guy's wallet. That's what really the scene was about.
Which he did get.
Yeah.
How stupid was the guy when he came back? And he's like, I lost it in here. And he's like, oh, well, look for it later.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay. He's like, yeah. He goes, I lost it. Like, he totally doesn't suspect that...
That whole wall scene was weird too, because he was bringing all the stuff out of the cupboard.
He was trying to trap him.
He was trying to trap him with things, and then he brought out the
butter.
And it was a bit weird because we know from the movie that he'd been spending a lot of time with the guy to butter him up. Mm. So he would have, I guess, picked up on the fact the guy was quite straight edge. So bringing out the stolen.
Yeah, I don't know why he brought out the stolen butter, because the guy was like massively. Liking the chocolates and stuff.
And then as soon as the butter came out, the scene kind of turned. He's like, I gotta leave. And I
think he was trying to sort of, maybe, this was my read. He was trying to see if he could fully convert the guy to his side.
Yeah, see, I think for me, the scene was set up where he's trying to do that. The guy's straight edge.
Yeah.
He pushed him away, and that leads into the scene where the guy finds the hole.
Yeah.
And I think it was building his character.
Because he finds the hole, and there's no element of him that's not telling. As soon as he finds the hole, he's like...
Yeah, and I think that was trying to see that character in there.
I'd be interested in kind of knowing the true story, if there was a guard who was somewhat sympathetic, who then, in the end, didn't go with the prisoners.
Well, I was reading up, the commander in real life was court-martialed by the Gestapo for letting them escape.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. We're talking about wartime Germany towards the latter end of the war. Like, they were desperate to, you know, witch hunts were common. And in fairness, like, I'm sorry, if I was running, like, the prison camps, that guy did fuck up.
Yeah, totally. Big time. Totally.
Like, he completely fucked up.
Yeah, totally.
He didn't, like, the movie's told through a very pro-Western lens. The Germans are somewhat ineffectual a lot of the time.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, you didn't watch this movie thinking, wow, the Germans run their prison camps extremely well.
No.
You were like, they sort of just let, you know, these guys were all over them. Also, when they found the tunnel, there didn't seem to be any repercussions. Like, when they found the tunnel, you know, it was like, oh, we lost the main tunnel, but there wasn't like this crackdown.
Well, I think, They didn't show it. You don't know what the repercussions was, because then they all escaped. Then we follow the escapees and we come back and we're just back in prison. So I assume they all went in the cooler.
Well, they put the escape on kind of fast forward, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, not on fast forward. They just got out. Once the guys had escaped, they got out of the prison.
So the original plan, if we go to the plan, they had was literally to get all 250 out, but then the tunnel that they made was like 20 or 30 feet shy of the forest.
Well, no, the original plan was to have three tunnels.
Yes.
Yeah, one tunnel that goes into the forest, two diversionary tunnels. If they pick one tunnel, have them all going into the woods.
Yeah,
that
but was like, the original plan. I know, plan. But when that plan was scotched because they found the tunnel, then they had the one, but they didn't make it all the way to the forest.
Yeah, but that wasn't part of their original plan.
No, that was like plan B.
That wasn't part of their plan B either.
Well, it was, wasn't it? Wasn't that plan B after...
Their original plan was to have three tunnels.
Yeah.
If one got caught, they have two more. All three would make it to the forest to get their 250 out. So what actually happened is Tom got caught.
Mm.
So they had Harry.
Mm.
Harry was meant to get into the woods.
Yes, but didn't.
But on the night when they dug up, because they obviously can't dig up till the night time, they realized they were 20 feet short.
Who the fuck fucked that up? Well, who was that on?
The surveyor guy.
Right.
Okay. The guy that did all the carols.
Oh, that guy. Maybe it was a bit too
did
busy.
Did you even watch the movie?
Yeah, I did, but I am often lost in the details. That's why you're here, Dion. Was that the guy with the funny mustache?
Yes.
Yeah, well, spent too much time on his mustache and too much time singing carols, and he fucked up bad.
Yeah, well, there's that scene where he's doing the tests and all that, and they pull the string.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was him with a mustache. It was a weird scene.
We're pinning it on him.
Yeah, we'll pin it on him.
Yeah, and, like, Cavendish, the surveyor, played by Nigel Stock.
That's right, yeah, him.
Yeah, well, he fucked up bad. Gordon Jackson, playing McDonald, intelligence, didn't show a lot of intelligence when twice in the movie he got busted when they just broke into English.
No, only once in the movie.
No, twice.
When was the first time?
The first time was when they did it themselves to him in the test. They were talking German. They said, then they said good German or something, and he fucked up.
No, he was the one that was doing the test. He administered the test to the guy.
Oh, and then he got caught out.
And then he goes, good German. And the guy goes, oh, thanks. What's his name? What's his character's name?
McDonald.
Thanks, McDonald. And he goes, that's an easy trick. You shouldn't fall for
that. Oh, and then he fell for it
And then
himself.
He fell for it in the bus.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, even more silly then, really.
Yeah, yes.
God. Well, I wonder how much of this was based on real life. Like, if that actually happened.
Not that much. I think...
You're so certain. Like, do you think James Garner's character was in a plane with a blind guy and then the plane went down? Like, because that was a dramatic scene.
No, I don't think so. And I think that's what I mean when I say not much. I think the numbers are right, the escape was right, but I think once they got out, a lot of it was just for dramatization.
It felt pretty dramatized that they went to an airport, just stole a fucking plane.
Yeah, look, honestly, they would have probably just caught a train, tried to get to Switzerland.
I would have thought that would have been a good opportunity to have a dogfight. You know what I mean? Like, there was a missed opportunity there to have
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, like in a modern movie, there would be a dogfight.
Yeah, and I think if I was to direct the movie, I'd have a dogfight and have the plane shot down, blind guy gets killed.
Yeah.
And the pilot gets taken prisoner back into the...
Yeah. How lucky were the people who didn't... About the 50 were quite unlucky, but they kind of... they kind of did deserve it. They got shot. Some of these guys had done, like, 18 prison breaks.
Yeah, but I don't think they... I don't think as a prisoner of war and a soldier, Geneva. You deserve to be shot.
Geneva Convention, probably.
Well,
yeah.
It's illegal to do that, but I don't think you deserve to be shot for trying to break out of prison in war. I mean,
Yeah, okay, but like you could see the logic of it from the German perspective. Is what I'm saying.
I can see the cold heartlessness of it from the German perspective. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, whereas, but then I'm saying on the flip side, how lucky was your Steve McQueen characters and your James Garner characters who got to come back to the camp?
Yes, that's very lucky. I'll be honest, I'm surprised they didn't get shot.
And this is a common thing amongst people who haven't watched Great Escape in a long time. A lot of people think Steve McQueen did do the jump and survives and goes to and reaches freedom, because it's quite a common thing amongst a lot of film goers.
Yeah, no, I couldn't remember the end. I assumed that it just ended on him doing the jump like a lot of the old movies, but no, he goes back into prison.
And famously, Steve McQueen was a rally car driver, did Grand Prix sort of things with his motorbike as well, was an accomplished rider. He wanted to do the jump, but he didn't do the jump. The stunt guy did the jump in the film, from my understanding, and he was pissed off about that.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that was Steve McQueen had quite an ego.
I'll take your word for it.
You'll take my fucking word for it.
Yeah, I guess. I can't be bothered looking it up.
Jesus, come on, man. Like, you're a millennial. You're supposed to be on your fucking phone all day long. Google's supposed to feed you all the answers.
Look at all these stereotypes. Yeah. You're not even a boomer, man. Jesus Christ.
You know my favorite decade? Have a guess which one it is. I'll tell you. 1950s.
Cool.
1950s.
I'm glad you like this. The systematic racism.
Oh Jesus!
Of the 1950s.
Here we go. Playing the race card, Leon. Come on, it's too late.
It's well known for it.
It's you know, apart from the racism.
Oh, okay.
Apart from the racism.
So, what do you like about the 1950s?
The music, most of all.
The music.
Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr.
Gangster ties. All of them. Every single one of them.
Dean Martin didn't have gangster ties.
Oh, maybe not Sammy Dean Martin. Didn't. Well, I reckon Sammy did.
Sammy played a lot of clubs that they were all run by gangsters back then.
He would have had. He wasn't made, but you know. Yes, Sinatra was made with those, wasn't he? Was Sinatra a made man?
No. He was in their pocket a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
But that was the time as well. Like, they ran all the clubs.
Yeah, see, my favourite time was the 1920s.
Fair enough. The Roaring Twenties, Dale?
The Roaring Twenties, Al Capone.
Yeah, I like the way you bring up Sinatra as a negative, as gangsters, and you're worshipping Al Capone. Jesus.
Tommy Guns blazing.
Yeah, fair enough, man. I just want to run through a few more things.
Oh, we should watch that movie. That should be on Cinema of Doom. Untouchables.
Great film.
Kevin
Costner, Sean Connery.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic movie. Now, obviously some movies, you know, I think this movie is a good example of getting a lot of actors either at their peak, like Steve McQueen, or approaching their peak. You had an early Charles Bronson performance. We know him mostly from the, you know, Death Wish and stuff like that later on in the 70s. But, you know, like, I think, I've got a feeling Charles Bronson was definitely a Magnificent Seven, but he's still quite young here. He's quite built. Did you notice how built Charles Bronson was in this movie?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he was pretty jacked, I thought. Now, I want to run into the performance. Richard Attenborough playing Bartlett Big X.
Yes.
You were wondering what was going on with the eye. I said that was symptomatic of the tortures that the Gestapo had done.
I don't believe you on that, though. But well, maybe.
I'm sure.
It was weird,
Google it, dude. I'm sure that eye mark was a symptom.
What was the character's name?
Bartlett. And Big X. Richard Attenborough's character. Richard Attenborough, who went on to direct. Didn't he direct Gandhi? Amongst other movies? He was a famous director. He acts in Jurassic Park. I'm pretty sure that he was, because when he enters the movie, he's just come direct from being with the Gestapo.
Yeah, and then he didn't talk about it.
Yeah. Now, he put a pretty good effort together in his
escape. Oh, yeah, there you go. In tribute, Attenborough sported a facial scar in his eye similar to Bushell's, while the real-life man also spoke German. So, the real-life character had a facial scar, so that's why.
Yeah, exactly. See, I was right.
All right, I'll give you that one.
Thanks, Theon. Jesus Christ, Dion. Cinema of Doom, we, you know, no stones left unturned.
Thank God.
And I thought, interesting point here. 50 people died, okay? Massacred.
50 people were ordered to be massacred by Hitler, yes.
Yes. Two or three escaped.
Yes.
And got, like, three. James Cohan's character.
And then Charles Bronson's character and Davy Guy, his friend.
Oh, did they escape?
Yes, that's why you don't see them.
They got on the boat at the end. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
And the Australian. Those are the only three that escaped.
Yeah. And then the rest of them got brought back. And then the leader of the camp, the leader of the Allied forces of the camp, the British guy with the walking stick,
yes.
He said, I think Bartlett accomplished what he wanted, which was to sow chaos
yes.
amongst the enemy. And then James Garner says to him, and you think that was worth the price? And yeah. He said, from a certain point of view, basically, yeah. Depends on your point of view. What do you think?
I think he's an idiot. I mean, what?
Who's an idiot?
The guy that said, the commander guy that said it's from a certain point of view. Because I still, I mean, I was thinking about, I'm just like, 50 lives lost. So let's say you pulled troops off the front line to find these guys.
And how many troops did you really pull off the front line?
One guy was killed in the movie, one Nazi, from where Steve McQueen stole his motorbike.
Was he killed?
Yeah. Mate, if you put wire across a road on a motorbike, you would kill him. So one Nazi was killed.
Okay.
And in return, 50 Allied troops.
Yeah.
I mean, how many troops do you think would they have saved? They wouldn't have saved hundreds of troops by escaping.
Well, this was pre-D-Day.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I got the impression, because they were in France and strolling around cafes.
When was D-Day?
End.
How far into the war?
1944. I think it was...
Yeah, so D-Day is 44.
June 6, 1944.
Yeah, but then it must have been post-D-Day.
No, because...
The war started, what, 1939?
1939, yeah. But there was a
lot... Yeah, okay, so it'd be 1943.
Yeah, around 1943, because the Russian front was a thing. Yes. It's mentioned in the thing.
But see, the Russian front was quite late, wasn't it?
I think Hitler invaded Russia in, I want to say, 1941. I think he invaded Russia in 1941.
Fair enough. Because, I mean, that's why he lost the war. He was fighting the war on two fronts.
Exactly. It was a huge factor. But anyway...
Also British intelligence.
My point was this, that... I sort of question, I don't know, I kept putting myself in, if I was a POW, would I be, I don't think I'd be a serial escaper. Yeah, I'd go along with the crowd if everyone's going to go on this escape.
Look, Dave, it's well documented that you're a coward.
I'm not a coward, it's but well like, documented. Some of these guys are like on the 18th or 19th escape.
Damn right, I'd be escaping every single time till I got shot or got out.
You would definitely be part of the fucking cool crowd trying to escape constantly. Yeah. You know, for sure.
Maybe not in a Japanese POW camp, because I don't want to have my head chopped
off. Yeah, the Japanese didn't fuck around, basically.
My uncle was in a POW camp.
Was he really?
In Japan.
Jeez, that'd be tough. That'd be tough yards.
Yeah, a great uncle. Not my uncle, so my great uncle.
I think things in this camp, really, frankly, were quite civilized. I'm sure it was a sanitized picture of what was really going on.
Actually, I was reading up one of the actors who... So a few of the actors have actually been in POW camps in World War II, because obviously 1963.
Sure, yeah.
And they said it was a very good recreation of what the German POW camps looked like.
Well, I mean, you know, fair enough. That's an interesting point of view. So I just thought that was... I've always watched this movie and thought, man, not many people made it out. But then again, at least some did. You know, like, it's an interesting sort
of... Well, 3 from 76 is not good odds.
No, I guess it isn't. And 50 dead, but 50 dead's the bad part.
Yeah, but, well, they were massacred, so... Yeah. It's not like they were shot escaping. They were ordered to be executed.
As you mentioned, the blind guy, I mean, that guy who took the shot fucking nailed the blind guy.
Well, he had a sniper rifle.
You reckon?
I mean, the weird thing is that, I mean, that whole scene's weird. This random guy standing on a hill, he turns around and then gets shot. I'm like, you could tell he has no weapon.
Well, the plane crashed, so they were sort of...
Yeah. So why wouldn't they just run up and see what was going on before they shot them?
If you saw a German plane crash and you were a German, you wouldn't exactly, like, in the war...
Well, no, but that's what the tower control was when he called them up.
Yeah.
That's when they knew it was stolen.
Yeah, but how far had he flown?
Yeah, it's flown a long way, and then all of a sudden they were there. But I mean, that's just part of the movies of that time.
That sniper took a massive shot, and I did say not enough credit goes to the German for that shot. He nailed him.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah, I guess so. There's no blood, but yeah.
There was blood. You saw the chest.
No, there's
it was
no
red. It was red.
No, there's not.
I thought there was some red blood on his chest.
There's no blood on him. He turns around, he's got some blood on his head from the plane, okay. But there's so actually... The bullet wounds in the movie actually don't show up as bullet wounds. Okay. It's not like now.
No, it's not graphic.
Like, you know, when the guy gets shot. But I thought it would show like
they
did
the old red sort of stain.
No, they didn't even do that.
Oh, okay.
He just died.
Fair enough. He just died. I mean, look, for me, a movie that just really kicks along the whole pace, not having watched it, have you seen Von Ryan's Express, Frank Sinatra?
No.
It's basically a very similar story.
Right.
I think it's a fictionalized one. Whereas I think this one, even when you're watching it, you do feel like they're really recreating something that actually happened. And I must say, yeah. I was very impressed by the level of organization that was going in amongst the camp and amongst all the Allied troops.
Well, if you have all your rotten eggs in one basket, they're going to make the basket rotten, aren't they?
Very good point, Dion. And that was, again, why did the Germans do that? I don't understand.
Because they're idiots. And if you do that, I would put them all in isolation camps.
But if I was going to do that, I would make the camp way more maximum security than that camp was. Like,
yeah.
I'd make it like a Supermax prison. Like, whereas that was just like, it was almost like recreational.
I think it was looked recreational, but I think it was hastily put up for them. It wasn't the concrete behemoths we have now for prisons. Especially in America.
Yeah, true. It was kind of a wartime prison, and yeah, you are right. It was constructed hastily.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Any thoughts wrapping up, Dion? I mean, I think, like, in terms of a movie, it stretches towards 3 hours. You feel the runtime is long, but it's a rewarding experience.
Yeah, no, so it's nearly a three-hour movie. 172 minutes,
I think it was, yeah.
The pace is good. Like, I actually think it could have probably gone, some of the bits could have been slowed right down to explain a bit more of the background of the characters.
Sure. Cause
it suffered what a lot of ensemble cast movies suffer in that.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. We'll edit that. It suffered what a lot of ensemble cast movies suffer in that there's so many characters.
Yes.
That you don't get to meet all of them, and the story can suffer because of that.
Hmm. Here's a suggestion. I would have thought it would be maybe when the characters enter the screen to put their title, subtitle of who they are on the first time you meet them. Because there's a lot of, like, names thrown at you. There's a lot of names bouncing around.
And you don't know who they are. Yeah, and I forgot a lot of them. I'm not very good with names.
IMDb was a help at the end.
Yeah, exactly. But, I think you wouldn't have done it in movies from the 60s. They wouldn't have even thought about that. And it would have been harder to do. I mean, I guess not really, because obviously just overlay the film with titles, which is how they did the titles back then. Yeah. Obviously, they just put two pieces of film, tape them together, put them through the reel.
You could have done it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, you could have done it.
You could have done it. As a stylistic choice is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's up to the director, I guess.
Yeah, John Sturges, excellent director, did a lot of hits, and this was one of his biggest hits.
Well, I mean, Marvel does it well, like, because the way they did their ensemble movies, they made a single move for every character and slowly built them in. So when you do watch Avengers, you already know the backstory, then have to worry about all that.
Exactly, good point. I've got a segment in Cinema of Doom. Favourite scene, Dion? Favourite scene in the movie? I've got one.
All right, you go first. Let me have a think.
My favourite scene is where that guy goes fucking crazy and just runs out to get shot. The guy who goes in the cooler with Steve McQueen.
Yeah, I know.
I liked that scene where he sort of... Because you watch him slowly disintegrate. And I thought that was a really big part of the movie. It was showing these guys who they kept referring to as being in the bank for a certain period of time, like 3-4 years. And I felt it was quite a number of characters. You had this feeling like they were strained to the nth degree. And he just broke. He spent too much time in the cooler. He just lost the ability to think properly. And he just went for the most crazy fucking escape attempt that would never work. It was a suicide run, you know?
Yeah, he was actually a very good character, and I thought he was a story done really well.
Agreed.
Like, they built him up, you could tell that he was getting crazier.
Yep.
You tell as the first attempt didn't work for him and he was back in the cooler, that he was getting crazier. And they talk about it, and then he obviously kills himself. They foreshadowed that really well.
Yes.
My favorite scene would probably be... I think Steve McQueen and him, the first time you meet him with the baseball.
Yes.
I think that's probably my favorite scene in the movie. I just thought it was a good scene. You meet the characters. The baseball thing added that bit of jeopardy in there. What's going to happen?
They had good chemistry too.
Yeah, exactly. And then they got the cooler with the ball. And then that I like the scene where they're talking and make up.
Favorite character or favorite performance. Favorite performance.
Probably James Garner. I really liked
James Garner was excellent.
Scrounging, and I thought the way he did the scrounging and like the way he just got a pickaxe out of the blue and stuff, I thought was pretty hilarious.
I'm going to give you... I'm very tempted to say Steve McQueen, but I think it's too obvious. I think Bartlett.
Oh, yeah.
I thought Richard Attenborough played that character very well. But it's a movie filled with strong performances. Like, Garner gives a good performance.
Yeah.
James Cohen gives a good performance. Steve McQueen gives one of his career best performances.
I agree.
Top three Steve McQueen performance. I even liked the guy who was the chief of all the Allied guys. The guy with the walking stick, I thought was good.
Yeah, very British.
Was he going to be part of the escape? Or
no, never.
Because of his leg?
I think also because of how high up he was never going to escape.
Right.
Okay. He's there to look after the camp.
Gotcha. I like a Dion. You're down with that kind of stuff, aren't you?
With what?
Like, you know, the hierarchy of what was going on in that film. Like, I thought that guy might have been crippled or something.
Well, he was also crippled.
He was also
crippled. He had a walking stick.
But you're saying his role was to sort of manage the rest.
Yeah, well, his role was to manage the whole prison.
Liaise with the
Germans, manage his men in the prison, because he was the highest rank. Whereas Bartlett was managing the X group, whatever they're called, to do the Great Escape.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Well, I mean, do you really think in terms of... Oh, I did... I'll tell you a scene I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Was the scene in the Paris cafe with James Coburn where the French resistance come up and kill the Nazi officers.
That is a very good scene, yes.
That's a good scene. And then he goes to the resistance guy, or to the guys behind the cafe. Are you resistance and do you know anyone who can help me? And they go, we know someone. And luckily they do.
Yeah, I did like how he asked if they were resistance or something. They just shot
three
like, German officers.
They could potentially be under investigation very shortly themselves. Are. Like,
yeah,
they could. These Germans, if they don't exactly need Sherlock Holmes to work out what went on here, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, in terms of out of 10, I'm giving it 8.5 out of 10, Dion. What are you giving it?
I think I give it an 8 out of 10.
Which is a strong mark for a 1963 movie, you know?
Yeah, but I think I'm taking into account it is a 1963 movie. Sure. So I'm giving it a bit of leeway there in terms of story, pacing and character.
For me, one of my favourite movies from sort of the wartime perspective, and I think it balances well drama with a bit of humour, but not too much humour.
Yeah, look, it's no Saving Private Ryan.
Totally not.
But I think it does what it wants to do well for the time. I mean,
yes.
When I say, like, there's not much jeopardy. I never felt on my edge of my seat tense in it, just because...
Well, they seem so surprised when the Germans have killed anyone, like, because...
Yeah.
Whereas now, it would just be kind of more like...
It's a very G movie, right? Yeah. It's made for families, and you can tell that, and I think that's what...
A massively dark twist, though, for such a G movie is when they do shoot the 50 people.
Yeah,
you know, that's,
but you don't see it, obviously. You just hear the guns and all that.
Yeah, but like, that is... The movie finally has to pay recognition to the fact we are... 50
people, so yeah. And they did it well.
I thought so. So 8 out of 10 from you.
Yeah.
I mean, Cinema of Doom have really enjoyed Great Escape. Next choice is yours, Dion. We're taking turns, Dion and I taking turns.
Yes, because I don't like some of Dave's choices, but I will watch them.
My choices are generally from the 20th century... You know, the 50s to the 70s.
And we've all seen the movies about 1,500
But that's
times.
Half the point of Cinema Doom. It's a deeper experience.
Fair
movies,
enough.
Movies that have embedded themselves in the popular consciousness.
Well, my next pick's Hellraiser.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Okay, I thought it was Shining.
No, that's your next pick.
Oh, okay, that's right. I'm being forced into it. I've never seen Hellraiser or Shining.
Dave's never seen The Shining.
I've not
that's
seen
right.
It.
He has never seen that classic.
I know
film.
A lot about it. I
classic
love Jack Nicholson.
Kubrick.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. In fact, I've been saving it to do for a similar film.
So. Exactly. So we, but I've
Hellraiser's
actually,
your
I've actually never seen Hellraiser either, and okay. I thought I want to watch.
Are we
it.
Going to do an audio commentary of Hellraiser?
I don't know.
We'll decide. We'll make our minds up.
Why don't we ask our listeners?
Yeah, ask the listeners.
What do the listeners think we should do? Audio commentary?
Or it's would you prefer a discussion like this?
I should preface. Audio commentary is just me yelling at Dave most of the film.
I get very confused in movies, as you might notice even from this commentary.
Yeah, and he asks stupid questions, and I'm like, oh my God.
We might have to pause the film a few times for me to get to grips with what's going on.
And then you'll probably hear, can I have a coffee, please?
Well, I had 2 coffees and 3 ice creams during this
three
one.
3 ice creams. Can you give me another ice cream, Dion?
Well, thank you, Dion, for coming on Cinema Doom. It's been quite a privilege and an honour.
Yes.
Hopefully Hellraiser.
Thank you for
shorter.
Having me.
Oh, no problems at all, Dion. And thank you very much to the Patreon listeners for supporting The Signal. We love you guys, and there will be much more to come from Cinema of Doom in the upcoming weeks and months. Good night. That was pretty good, Dion.